Glorious day, fellow traveler. Welcome to Science and God with Dr. G. That's me, Dr. Michael Gillen, physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Christian. That's right, living, breathing evidence that science and Christianity are not mortal enemies, but good friends. Actually, an awesome power couple.
One of the most amazing claims the Bible makes is that the birth of Jesus was heralded by a very special star. Now, over the years, people have wondered, was it really a star, or was it something else? And if so, what was it exactly? Well, that's what today's journey is all about. All right. For 2,000 years, a lot's been said and written about the Star of Bethlehem. Yet everything we know about this star is contained in just a handful of verses. Yeah, in the second chapter of Matthew. That's it. The other Gospels don't even mention it. Everything else you've ever heard about the Christmas star is pure speculation. Keep that in mind. Now, here's what the Bible says, using the New Living Translation. Listen for the five clues contained in these verses. You ready? Here we go. Quote, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him. King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of his leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, where is the Messiah supposed to be born? In Bethlehem in Judea, they said, for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, O Bethlehem in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah. For a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd for my people Israel. Then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. Then he told them, go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too. After this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother, Mary. And they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Unquote. That's it. That's all the Bible tells us about the Christmas star. Okay? Did you get the clues, the five clues? Here they are. Clue number one. Jesus was born during the reign of King Herod the Great. We believe Herod died sometime between 4 BC and 1 BC. So, the Christmas star must have appeared sometime before then. All right, keep that in mind. Clue number two. The Bible refers to wise men. Now, in the original Greek, they're called magoi, which is where we get the words magi and magician. Now, at the time of Jesus' birth, wise men, or magi, were well-known astrologers. They were highly educated, highly respected, and oftentimes worked for kings. Another thing. The Bible says they were from eastern lands. that probably means Babylonia or Mesopotamia. Regions where astrology was born and practiced big time. All right? Clue number three. The wise men saw the star as it rose, quote unquote, as it rose. Now, in the original Greek, that phrase is en te anatole. It signifies a very special kind of rising. It means the star rose before the sun came up. It was a morning star, in other words. Now, in astronomy, we call that kind of rising a heliacal rising. En te anatole. Heliacal rising. All right? Keep that in mind, too. All right, clue number four. Herod and the whole of Jerusalem were surprised to hear about the star, which makes sense if you think about it, because God commanded Jews not to practice the magical arts, including astrology. So even though the Jews were surrounded by people who believed in astrology, they themselves avoided it. That's why Herod and his peeps were surprised by what the wise men said.
Hey there, breaking in for just a second to tell you about where human society is headed. The world my Gen Z son and his generation will inherit promises to be very different than the one we grew up in. That's why I've written a book called The End of Life as We Know It, Ominous News from the Frontiers of Science. Think of it as a survival manual for the 21st century. You can get it on Amazon or wherever you buy books. Now, back to the podcast.
Finally, clue number five. When the wise men arrived in Bethlehem, they saw the star stop over the house where Jesus now lived. Now notice, the Bible says house. Jesus isn't in the manger anymore, which makes sense again because it took time for the wise men to make the long trip to Bethlehem from eastern lands. All right? So now, scholars everywhere have pieced together these clues and come up with some interesting theories, okay? Some say the star of Bethlehem was actually a comet, okay? A comet or a supernova, which is an exploding star. Honestly, it would take me hours, if not days, to explain them all. I don't have that time, obviously. So instead, let me tell you about one of the most talked about theories out there right now. It belongs to a Dr. Michael Molnar, a highly respected astronomer who is now retired from Rutgers University. Now, like all theories, his theory has strong critics, okay? But it also has some incredible champions. For example, my dear friend Owen Gingrich, you know, the legendary astronomer and historian of science from Harvard. All right? So in case you want to check this theory out for yourself, click on the link in my show notes, okay? But for now, let me just tell you the theory's main points, okay? Here goes. According to Molnar, the wise men saw something astrologically stupendous on April 17th in 6 BC. All right? So Herod was still alive. On that day, at dawn, just before the sun came up, the giant planet Jupiter rose brightly in the east. In other words, it was a heliacal rising. What's more, Jupiter is the Roman name for Zeus, the Greek god of heaven and earth. So, to the wise men, to any astrologer of that day, this clearly signified a regal birth somewhere in the world. But that's not all. Because on that same day, April 17th, at noon, the regal planet, Jupiter, had a very close brush with the moon. In astronomy, we call it an occultation. Now, to astrologers, the occultation of these two mighty celestial bodies signified not just a regal birth, but a divine kingly birth. But that's still not all. Because Jupiter's heliacal rising and its occultation with the moon happened in the constellation Aries, the ram. In those days, astrologers associated Aries with Judea, the land of the Jews. So altogether then, to astrologers of that day, to the wise men, the profound events of April 17th in the year 6 BC heralded the birth of a divine, immortal Jewish king in the land of Judea. Where exactly in Judea? They didn't know. That's why they traveled to the capital of Judea, Jerusalem, to find out. But as the Bible explains, Herod was clueless because he wasn't an astrologer and neither were his top advisors. They knew nothing about Jupiter's heliacal rising or its occultation with the moon or the constellation Aries. All they knew is that Micah, the prophet, had predicted that a king would be born in Bethlehem. That's why Herod sent the wise men to Bethlehem. And when they did, the regal planet Jupiter continued drifting westward against the starry night sky. But one night, it appeared to stop drifting. It stayed absolutely still within the constellation Aries, the constellation of Judea. But Dr. G, you say, planets don't just stop in their tracks. Come on, that's nuts. Well, my friend, I have good news for you. Sometimes a planet does stop in its tracks. Let me explain. It's true, a planet usually appears to move across the sky in one direction. But every now and again, it appears to stop and reverse course. Now, in astronomy, we call the about-face retrograde motion, and we call the moment when the planet stops a stationary point. Now, of course, planets don't actually stop and reverse course, okay? It's an illusion caused by the Earth's revolution around the sun. I won't get into it. It's too technical. It's just like with the sun. Think about the sun. As you know, the sun doesn't actually move across the sky. It's an illusion, right? Caused by the Earth's rotation on its axis. But the illusion is very real. It's an illusion, but it's real. Now here's the thing. Dr. Molnar used computers to see what the sky looked like back in 6 BC. Not just April 17th, but the whole year. And lo and behold, he discovered that Jupiter did in fact experience a stationary point on, get this, December 19th in the year 6 BC. Now, is Dr. Molnar's theory correct? We'll never know for sure because we weren't there. But what his theory says is this. Whether you or I believe in astrology is irrelevant. What matters is that people 2,000 years ago, very wise people, did. They spent their days and nights studying the heavens. And what Molnar discovered is that in 6 BC, on the morning of April 17th, when Herod the Great was still alive, astrologers saw something so breathtaking, so unprecedented, that some of them packed their bags and headed to Judea. One last thing. 2,000 years ago, most Romans believed in fate, in the pagan god Fortuna. They believed that a person's life, yours included, is preordained, that what will be, que sera, sera, and there was nothing you could do about it. All you could do was to keep a close eye on your horoscope to see and prepare for what Fortuna had in store for you. It was a pretty bleak worldview. But the birth of Jesus changed all that, radically and permanently. And that's why every December, billions of Christians all over the world celebrate Christmas. And that includes me. Every Christmas, I rejoice that I'm not a slave to fortuna. That no matter what comes my way, for better or worse, God has given me the freedom to choose how to react. Every Christmas, I don't look to the universe, to stars, planets, and comets for guidance. I look to the one who made the universe and everything in it for wisdom. Every Christmas, I don't thank my lucky stars for what I have. I thank Jesus for my many blessings. And this year, those blessings include this podcast. And you, my fellow traveler. God bless you, my friend. And Merry, Merry Christmas.
Okay, that's it for now. Remember, this podcast is not a lecture series. It's a conversation. So now it's your turn. Comments, questions? I'm eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of ways you can connect up with me via my social media links in the show notes below. Till next time, I'm still Dr. G saying, I love science, I love God, I also love you, my fellow traveler. Thanks for listening.